Okay, we're rolling with one mic. It's gonna have to do. I'm super pumped to have the first episode of the podcast not only be in the Mendenhall Valley Library, but with Juno Empire reporter, soon to be Anchorage reporter, James Brooks. Now, James, for people that have no idea who you are, could you give them maybe like a 1 or 2 minute spiel?
I'm James Brooks, State House reporter for the Empire, and as you said, soon to be reporting for the Anchorage Daily News, but still here in Juno, so I'm not going to go anywhere. Born in Charleston, South Carolina, Navy family, so I don't remember Charleston very much because moved almost immediately to Philadelphia and then down to Jacksonville, Florida. And then parents separated, so I moved off to Indiana, and that's where I went to grade school and high school. Always summers with dad wherever he was, vacations with dad, Christmas, Thanksgiving, going back and forth to different places around the country. And then for college, I went to Virginia Tech. I was looking for a school that had a good computer science program because I thought that's what I wanted to do, was in the mountains, and had a good football team. And so those were my three qualifications. And Virginia Tech worked out because my dad was living in Virginia at the time, so I could get in-state tuition, and that was cheaper and the way to go. And so I did my 3.5 years there, graduated because I couldn't afford to stick around for 4, so I knew I had to get done as quickly as possible. Moved down to Key West and worked at a newspaper there for a year. When I was working there, I saw an ad for the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, and I'd always thought, hey, I want to visit Alaska someday. So when I saw that, I was like, well, if they're hiring and they'll pay moving expenses, I can get paid to go to Alaska instead of having to pay to go to Alaska. And so that was the inspiration, and moved up on January 15th, 2008. It was 65 and sunny when I left Key West, and it was the first day of 40 below that winter in Fairbanks when I got off the plane at midnight. But I didn't know any better. I thought, hey, this is what Alaska's always like. So just got to roll with it, and stayed there for 3 years. The Fairbanks paper owns the Kodiak paper, and the Kodiak paper was looking for an editor. So I said, hey, I'll do it. Got hired down there to be the editor there. Worked there for 3 years from 2011 to 2014. After that, a friend of mine had moved from Kodiak to Juno. And at the time, she was working at the Empire and said, hey, there's an opening here. You should come here too. And so I followed to Juno in 2014, and I've been here since then.
Are you sold now? It's journalism all the way?
I think so. For as long as journalism's around and will let me keep doing it, I think that's the big question.
I want to know, since you have been reporting on the Capitol this whole last year, in the last election, was there any one that really surprised you?
So the 2018 election?
Yeah.
Surprises, I think the fact that the Democrats did so badly was the big surprise. I think the fact that the coalition got blown up, they didn't make any gains on any seats, they lost 2 seats. I think the biggest surprise for me was down in Homer, where Paul Seaton lost pretty badly to Vance. I can't remember her first name off the top of my head. But that was the biggest legislative surprise for me, and really the biggest surprise overall. I think the margin on ballot measure 1 surprised me. I figured it would lose, but I only figured it would lose by, say, 6 to 8 points. I didn't think it would lose by a 2-to-1 margin. So that was a big surprise for me on that one. Looking nationally, everyone was talking about blue wave, blue wave, blue wave. And I was thinking, okay, there'll probably be some effect here in Alaska, maybe a small bump for Democrats' chances. But if anything, it was the reverse that happened. And I think we're all looking at the results of that now.
I want to know, how'd you wind up in Juno exactly?
So as I was saying, I was working in Kodiak at the newspaper there. And a friend of mine, Jennifer Canfield, had moved from the radio station there in Kodiak to the Empire. She was at the time working as the State House reporter here for the Empire. She said, hey, there's an opening at the Capital City Weekly. They're looking for an editor. I think it'd be a good move for you. And, you know, I was happy in Kodiak. I was doing well, and folks seemed to like what I was doing. But it's one of those things where if you don't try it, you'll probably always ask what if or regret it. And if there's one thing I've learned, it's that you try stuff because you never know if you'll like it or not. And even if you hate it, you can say, hey, at least I tried it. It might be scary or difficult, but you tried it, you gave it a shot. And if it worked out great, you can keep doing it. And if not, no. So I left Kodiak and picked up that Capital City Weekly job, did that for about a year. And they're like, hey, we'd like to make this a hybrid job where you're half editing the Weekly, half editing the Empire. And I was like, okay, I can do that. And ended up doing that for a while. And then Jennifer had left from the State House Reporter, gotten replaced. That replacement had left. The person had gotten replaced. And then that person was getting ready to leave. And they're like, okay, we're going to need a new state reporter. Who's it going to be? And I said, I'll do that if you find someone to take over the editing job.
Right.
And so that's how I ended up doing the State House reporting.
Do you enjoy reporting more than editing? I mean, from the get, it sounds like a more fun job.
Yeah, I do. Because you're getting out, you're getting to talk to people like you do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the more rewarding side of things, is getting out and doing things. Even in Kodiak, when I was editing, I was still getting out and taking pictures and doing everything. The drawback with that is that it's about half the size of Juneau, the town is, and the paper's about a third of the size. And so you're almost like a one-man band having to do everything. There's other people there, but you're constantly stretched to do more. And I felt like if I wanted to do a good job, I was ending up working like 6-12 hour days pretty much.
Yeah.
Going out and doing stuff. And so just got burned out on it over time. But going back to what you had asked, I do think the reporting's the fun part, because you're constantly learning, you're constantly seeing something new. And if it's not new to you, then you get to explain it to someone as if it is new to them. And that's, I think, the most fun thing, is taking something that someone uses or experiences every day and then explaining why that is. So you turn on your tap, you get your water. Well, where does it come from? What's working well? What's not working well? What happens if the water goes out one day? Like, do you know where the problems are likely to be? That type of thing.
I did a little bit of reporting just for a spell. And one thing that I found is it's super easy to get burnt out because the news never stops. I'm curious how you're able to have a work-life balance in this kind of field.
I don't think you can. I think you just have to do the best you can. You can carve out something for yourself, but I don't know that you can, honestly, doing it. That's why I think a lot of people leave journalism pretty quick, is because if you can't keep up the pace or you don't feel like there's some reward in doing that, I mean, you can't just come into it as just another job. There has to be something in addition to something extra that makes you keep up with it. Because if you're just in it for the salary or something like that, you're going to leave fairly quickly. If you're just in it to try it out, you're probably going to leave pretty quickly, unless you make a connection to it and say, there's a reason I want to do this.
I usually put out a call for anybody who wants to ask a guest questions. I did this in radio. You got the most responses.
Oh, excellent.
We should start with,
Nona Diamond wants to say, James is pretty notorious for his outlandish suit jackets. How did this start? And please don't ever let it stop.
The reason for that is that everyone in the Capitol tends to wear two colors.
Okay.
They wear either black or navy blue. So you see those suit colors all the time. And sometimes people might spice it up with a tie that's a different color. But given the number of people who go in and out of that building, it's easy to blend in or get lost in the crowd. And so my thought was that, okay, A, I don't like blending in all that much.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like getting lost in the crowd. I want to feel like I'm mattering and what I do is important. And if I go out and wear something different, then people know who I am and they're like, okay, that's who this person is. It makes me more easily recognizable. I'm less lost in the crowd, which enables me to do my job better, because I'm not constantly reintroducing myself to people who see 1,000 people a day. They know that, okay, this is the guy that I talked to the other day. He was wearing a green suit that day. Today he's wearing a red suit. So, but it's the same guy. And so that makes it easier for me to do my job. There's actually a goal to it, is that it gets me to stick out in their minds. And so that's why I do it.
Love that. All right.
Let's get another one. Let's see. This one comes from Linda Smith. Man, I don't want to put you on the spot here. Some locations in Juneau have a person's name. Do you know who Stephen Richards was?
It's not off the top of my head. I'd have to go
Sorry, Linda. All right. Jim Brooks, I'm sure you know this gentleman. Will his new boss allow him to come to Miami to visit his dad, who will be in town from Italy?
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll find out. I have to ask.
Let's see. James really knows his history, but I heard he almost became part of history one 4th of July in Philadelphia. Can he share that story?
That question came from my stepmom. And so this is a pretty notorious family story. And okay. I actually shared it with the governor when he had a dinner one time at the mansion. So I'm happy to share it here. So growing up with my family, every time my sister and I would go out to our dad's for summer or vacation or something, we'd always do family trips, whether it's like walking the Freedom Trail in Boston or going out to see all of the landmarks in Philadelphia. And so that was one of the trips one summer, was go to Independence Hall, go to all of the landmarks, see the Liberty Bell, that type of thing in Philadelphia. And in Independence Hall, if you've been there, it's big 18th century building. It's like if you imagine a convention center today, but if it was built in the 18th century. There's a lot of open rooms, some of the feeling of a courthouse today. There's railings and banisters, podiums, desks, that type of thing. And walking through that building, there's railings that keep you away from some more sensitive spots in that building. And as a kid, you're looking around, you're swinging your legs, you're swinging your arms, looking around like that. And I was poking my leg in and out of the railing, in and out of the barrier. So there's bars holding up the railing. So you have the top bar where your hands are, and then there's a bottom foot bar, and then little posts in between to hold them up. And just turns out that they are just wide enough that my leg could go through but not get back out. So I'm in the room where they signed the Declaration of Independence, and we're getting the tour from the ranger. I'm doing that, and he goes off, starts leading the crowd the other way. I turn to go, and that's when I realize I can't leave because my knee is stuck in this railing. And like, I flag down my dad, and he comes back and starts helping me to get out, but he can't get me out either. So he goes and flags down another one of the National Park Service rangers who's in this building. And this ranger sees what the situation, says, I know what to do, vanishes into an office, and comes back with a Costco-sized jar of Vaseline. Yeah. Because evidently, not only am I not the first person that this has happened to, this happens often enough that they have this jar specifically for these cases. Because it's summer, we're all wearing shorts, I've got this sweaty, sticky knee stuck in this, God only knows how many hundreds of years old railing. It's not like they can dismantle this historic object, so they just Vaseline up my knee and pop it out. Yeah. And so my dad always jokes that you almost became a part of history. So,
what an excellent question. I'm going to have to give shout outs to your stepmom for that one. That was Karen, right?
Karen, begin.
All right. Dana Colleen. Oh, man, this is so... Dana, you're a bad lady for even asking this question. If there were only two books left in the world, which one would you prefer to read, Twilight or 50 Shades of Grey?
I'll go with Twilight on that one. And that one's coming from my sister, by the way. So, yeah, she knows how to do it. But, yeah, Twilight.
I've read Twilight because I would talk a whole lot of shit about Twilight. And then someone was like, well, dude, have you even read the book? I was like, no. They're like, well, you're a hypocrite. I was like, all right, I'm going to read the book. I'm not going to be fazed by it. I was fazed by it. It was the worst read I've ever had.
I haven't read either of them, but I had heard once that 50 Shades of Grey was based on a Twilight fan fiction or something like that. So I think it's got to be worse than the other one. I couldn't tell you, but
fair enough.
As we're going into the next legislative session, being on the ground for the last one, do you have any maybe predictions, insights of what's coming next year?
So depending on what happens with the legislature, that'll matter a whole lot, because got to remember Mike Dunleavy is going to be the first governor from a party that we've had in 4 years. So Walker always had to deal with the legislature and never got it down. He always had problems dealing with the legislature, regardless of who was in control, either Republicans or the coalition in the House the past 2 years. If Dunleavy gets a Republican House and a Republican Senate, it's going to be a lot easier for him, because he'll have folks who think a lot more like he does, and he'll be able to get a lot more done. So he would be more successful in accomplishing his goals if he gets that Republican House and Senate. So that's something to watch out for here in coming up in the next few weeks. We'll figure out if he gets that Republican House and Senate and if he's able to make things happen the way he wants to. In regard to what he wants to do, he's said it during the campaign. He wants to do some things with the permanent fund. He wants to do a tighter spending cap. And so in order to do those things, you're going to need to see some constitutional amendments. And he's proposed some other ones in the past. I don't know if he still supports those ideas, like school voucher program. That would require a constitutional amendment. He's supported efforts to change the way judges are selected in Alaska. That would require a constitutional amendment to change the makeup of the Alaska Judicial Council. That's a lot of amendments. You need so many votes in the House and Senate to even get an amendment on the ballot that it would be really difficult even with a small majority of Republicans in the House and Senate. So some of the things I'm going to be watching out for is if there's a call for a constitutional convention, because then you could take all of those amendments and put them out on the table. It'd be a lot easier to tackle it that way, because the call for the convention can be done by the legislature more easily than you can pass an amendment onto the voters. And so if there's a convention, then that's something we haven't seen since 1955, and we don't know what would happen there. It would be very interesting. But that's a lot of speculation at this point. We know, based on his campaign, what he wants to do. And so based on that idea, we'll see what happens next.
Do you think it's feasible, if there was a Republican legislature, that there would be the kind of PFD reform that Dunleavy was looking for? Because it seems very antithetical. Because as I understand it, he wants to pull $19 billion out of a reserve fund. That seems very anti-conservative.
It's not $19 billion. It'll end up being about $6 billion. Oh. And so it can be done. And what was said during the campaign is probably still true now, is that any consequences are longer term ones. The fund can handle it in the short term. And the issue is, then what? If you go back to the traditional dividend formula, you're not taking money out of the fund and using it for government expenses, which is something he said he's opposed to unless there's a vote of the people first. If you do that, the problem is that then you're confronted with a bigger state deficit. This year, the legislature approved a plan that says they want to use $1.7 billion from the fund for general government expenses, things like buses, roads, that kind of thing, and $1 billion for the dividend. If you say, hey, we don't want to use that $1.7 billion, you got to figure out, okay, what do I do with that? Because the expenses don't go away unless you cut the budget. I don't think there's a way for the legislature to cut that much from the budget, especially in 1 year. But even overall, I don't think there's a way for them to do it. And then the question is, okay, how do you make ends meet? Dunleavy has said he doesn't want to raise taxes. Okay. But the problem is the other state savings accounts don't have enough money to make ends meet for more than a year or maybe two, even with higher oil prices. Right now, even with that PFD spending that the legislature did this spring, there was still projected to be a deficit of about $700 million. The state could afford that for 3 years, unless there was a rise in oil prices. And there was. So right now, for this fiscal year, it doesn't look like there's going to be a deficit. So that buys an extra year, maybe. But oil prices have to stay up, and we know that they go up and down. And so the issues don't go away in the long term. I mean, in the short term, yeah, it's okay. But in the long term, the problems are still there.
I really want to switch gears. When you're not on the Capitol reporting, what do you do in your free time?
Well, you had asked about work-life balance, and yeah. I told you there isn't much of one. So
I know. I'm kind of wondering if I didn't answer my
own. Yeah. So I honestly don't have a lot of free time. So when I do, it tends to be like getting away from people, going out on hikes. I mean, there's tons of trails in Juneau that are just great. Just reading something that isn't technical or something that's fiction. Like I'll read a crime story or a science fiction story or things like that. Something that's more distant and removed from what we're going on now, anything that that's escapism type of thing. And yeah, a book, getting outside, especially, those are all good things.
And if you weren't doing journalism in a decade, if you could just completely shift gears and do something completely different, what would it be?
Sure. I'd love to settle down and do full-time like novel writing or nonfiction writing. I mean, because I think history research is something I'm interested in too, looking back, because that's a kind of escapism even now. The idea that if you go back and even if you're reading what happened, you have the assurance of knowing how it turned out. So we were just celebrating the centennial of the armistice.
Right.
Well, during the war, nobody knew how it would turn out, right? If you're living in 1916, 1917, you don't know what's going to happen from day to day. You don't know how the war is going to go. But now, living now 100 years later, we have the assurance, the knowledge that it ends in November 1918, and we know how it ends. So the panic, nervousness we feel today, regardless of what side of politics you're on, 10, 20 years from now, you'll have the assurance of knowing how it turned out. And looking back as I read history, I feel like, okay, what we're feeling now is probably what people felt like 100 years ago. They didn't have the assurance of knowing how it turned out, and we don't today either.
That's really good. You know, one of the reasons that I started this whole Streets of Juno thing was because when I was a kid, I wanted to do something that would be put down in history books. When I was a little kid, I used to think that I wanted to be a preacher. But these days with social media, I think it's important to just write the history. And that's, you know, part of the reason why this is, because if anybody wanted to know about some of the characters in Juneau, Alaska, they'd have to, you know, in some cases, go to my page. And I think that's a really lovely idea to write history. Although I wonder if it isn't a cop-out, because it's kind of journalism. It's just journalism where you know the end.
Yeah. Well, but what you're doing is important, because I firmly believe that every person has a story that's worth telling.
Right.
I mean, everyone has their own life. And I know there's probably one of those long German words for it, just like there is for anything else. But the idea that every person has a life just as rich, just as interesting as your own, but you and I only get to see slivers of it. Even someone we see every day, or our own family members, we don't know what's inside their heads. We don't know what's happening with them when we're not around. And so everyone has just as interesting a life as you do. And I think what you're doing is revealing that, because we don't get to talk to everyone every day. And so when they get a talk, part of that gets revealed. And I think that's important to see.
On the subject of revealing, I'm guaranteed in the audience of this video/podcast will be members of your family. Could you think of one thing that nobody knows about you? And it doesn't have to be like super dark stuff coming out of the closet here. But just to give these people value who do know you really well, is there something about yourself that you haven't told anybody that you can tell people?
Oh, sure. 2 years ago at Christmas, my dog died. I was out walking her at the Mendenhall Lake, and ice covered, gorgeous day. There was that opening over by the falls, and she slipped in and just never came back up. Friend I was with actually jumped in after her, but he didn't find her, and I told him to go run back. And I looked around, but no trace of her until the spring, and when they found her remains. But since then, everybody's been asking me, when are you going to get another dog?
Oh.
And so I can tell you, I'm ready to get another dog.
Oh.
So I'm hoping now with a new job, new situation, once things get settled down here, I think I'll be ready to do that.
Are you the type of guy to get a Gastineau Humane Society dog, or do you have like a breed already picked out?
I joke with my friends that I want a low mileage dog,
okay.
something like a coupe, something like two-door dog. Yeah, no, just a mid-sized dog.
All right.
Mid-sized dog that's maybe a year to 4 or 5 old. So we'll take a look at the shelters and see who needs some help.
Also, if anybody is listening to this conversation who is an aspiring journalist, they want to dive in, you know, for better or for worse, and see what this is, what kind of advice could you give them to have them best prepared to work maybe even in town?
Basically, know people, know a lot of people, know who to talk to. Don't give your opinion, just saying what's happening, and then explain the context, why something is happening. Don't say whether it's good or bad, because, I mean, you don't know that yet. You don't have that 20 years down the road of knowing how things turn out, right? Mm-hmm. The biggest asset I've found is people's cell phone numbers. Write down every cell phone number You get because there's not really a lookup, easy lookup for that. So when you get in touch with someone, just talk to them and listen. Doesn't always have to be about work, but if you see them, just catch up and see how things are going with them.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That might just be good advice for any profession.
Probably.
Man, since this is going to be, you know, down in the internet record forever, if there was one thing, James Brooks, that you could be remembered for that characterized your legacy, what would you want it to be?
Sure, I'd want to be the Highlander.
That's good. Oh, man. All right. But wait, I actually haven't seen enough of this series. Doesn't the Highlander, like, die over and over and over again?
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's true. But you got to keep the memories. Keep the memories.
That's fair. All right. Okay, well, thank you so much. Is there anything that you want to add? Any questions that you want to ask me? This is my first show. I have no idea.
I think you're doing a good job.
Okay, sweet. Well, this has been the very first episode of the Streets of Juneau podcast, rolling with one mic, because that's how we're going to do. Thank you so much, James, for coming in.
Thanks, Glenn.